This is the Vorpal Network.
This episode of The Tome Show is brought to you by Noble Knight Games, where Out of Print is available again, and listeners like you, thanks for using The Tome's Amazon store.
Hey, this is Mike Merles, lead developer of 4th Edition, and you're listening to The Tome.
Welcome to The Tome, episode 152. The Tome is a D&D news, reviews, and interview show, and I'm your Tome host, Jeff Greiner. In this episode, we're going back to the basics with D&D Essentials Part 1. And with me today is a crew of people that are having entirely too much fun, so hopefully none of that comes through in the show. First of all, we have Samuel Dillon. Welcome back, sir.
Thank you.
We've apparently been chatting for a good 15 minutes before recording, and we're having way
too much. Shh, don't tell our secrets.
Oh, I'm sorry. The podcasting secrets. Also with us is Tracy Hurley.
Hello.
The Tome Show's girl. Is that how we should refer to you?
You could.
I've already been working hard at alienating you in as many ways as possible.
Wow.
That's okay.
You know, Jeff, that's
this is just my initiation.
This is your initiation, really? Because you haven't been on enough at this point.
No, I think Jeff just earned himself a junk punch next time you see him.
That's probably fair.
Yes. Just wait. You know, if I can kill Rob Schwab's character, just think what I can do to yours.
Oh, threaten my character. You haven't seen
for you.
I say you haven't seen my characters. I usually put themselves in enough danger all by myself. I play by the theory of embrace the stupid. And lastly but not leastly, a fellow Vorpal Networkite is with us. It is Jared Glynn. Welcome, sir.
What up, ye dogs? I mean, ye gods? I mean, attend? What? Yeah. Hi, guys.
Oh, boy. We might get into some actual D&D discussion tonight, huh? Let's find out.
Might happen.
So, just so people know, in this episode, we're going to be talking about the first half-ish of the D&D Essentials products. They are a series of products that are intended to always be in print and give new players of D&D a sort of a good place to start instead of having to buy up all the backlog of books that might be out of print. The total series will be 10 products, and in this episode, we're going to examine 4 of them. The Basic Set, or Red Box, Heroes of the Fallen Lands, The Rules Compendium, and Dungeon Tiles Dungeon. I think we have a pretty good mix of opinions with the group tonight. We have people of different levels of experience with the game and different experiences teaching others the game, and I think some different opinions on how the Essentials line is actually coming down. So, I look forward to digging into it, but first I want to mention our sponsor of the episode, Noble Knight Games. Noble Knight will buy up all of your old games that you don't want anymore and sell them to people who've been looking for that gem for years. My pick for this episode is Dungeon Tiles Number 1, Halls of the Giant King. The release of the Dungeon Tiles set in Essentials has me chomping at the bit to give Dungeon Tiles another try. I tried them for a while, I abandoned them, and now I'm really eager to get back into it and use some of the strategies discussed in a recent episode of this show. Unfortunately, a lot of the old sets are cool, but out of print and hard to find. Unless you go to Noble Knight, they will hook you up, and you can find this set for $20 at noblenight.com.
Noble Knight Games has been serving the needs of thousands of gamers worldwide since 1997. With a huge selection of over 30,000 unique products, including discounts on most in-print games of up to 50% off or more, Noble Knight Games is the place for out-of-print RPGs, board games, war games, collectible card games, miniatures, and all things game-related. They ship worldwide and will purchase or trade your titles you no longer need, new, or used. Your satisfaction is guaranteed. Just visit www.noblenight.com or visit our website for direct access to thousands of new, out-of-print, and in some cases, one-of-a-kind items.
All right. The intro stuff is out of the way. It's time to dig into it. I know. Let's right up front here, get some things out of the way. I think Tracy fills our role as the least experienced player at, what, a year and a half or so?
Yes.
Okay. I don't know who fills the role as the most experienced player. I've been playing for 21 years almost.
You win.
I've been playing since 1982, so.
Okay, I was 3 in 1982, so wow. You win.
Yeah.
You're old. So, yeah.
I was -3 in 1982, so.
So we've got a very broad range of experience here, from 1 year to a lot of years. We also have different levels of experience with the books themselves, the products themselves. I've read through them pretty decently, whereas Tracy was one of the few people running the Red Box at Gen Con, one of the first people to get to actually run the new rules. Is that right?
Yeah. I think there were maybe 7 DMs at Gen Con who ran it, so and I got to take mine home. So Red Box, I know pretty well.
Right on.
I think.
And I think we've got a wide range of opinions here as well, because I think some of us on the panel tonight love Essentials, and Jared is a seething ball of hate.
I am a seething ball of hate, yes.
So...
Nice.
I think it would make sense to start with the product that is most likely to be the introduction to D&D for new players, and that would be the starter set. So let's talk about the Red Box. What do we like? What don't we like? What's in it? Tracy, you know it well. What's in it?
Well, you get the player's guide, which is basically a solo adventure that helps you build your first character. You get a small Dungeon Master's Guide that has an adventure for a party of 4 to 6 people, as well as additional monsters you can put into the dungeon if you want. There's maps, and there's tokens. Tokens for both player characters and monsters that are in the adventure.
Very good. And I think that... And the poster map and cards for powers, and did you mention all those things?
Oh, yeah, and the cards for powers. Yeah.
So that's what's in it. Jared, why does it suck?
Okay, here's my thing. I'm not gonna hate this. I'm gonna say that this is great for what it is, but since you asked me why it sucks, because I don't have problems with the content. But real quick, let me tell you that the Red Box, the design, other than for old school value of it, it's not going to appeal to new players in general. Like, I look at that thing and I automatically am thinking retro. You know, this is for people who've been playing the game for 20 years, and that's exactly the opposite of what it's supposed to be. It's actually supposed to bring in people who've never played before, a bunch of 12-year-olds, 12 and up, it says right on the box. And I'll tell you one thing, this does not look like something that would appeal to someone who's 12 years old. So if you want to know what sucks, it's the design. So,
yeah, I'd have to say that's sort of my, one of my criticisms of the Red Box is that the, what's on the outside and what's on the inside don't match up. You know, the outside is something to appeal to the nostalgia of old school gamers, and the inside is something to try to bring in the new players. And those two things are very different audiences.
Amen. I'm wondering if they were really targeting it at parents, though, that you know, have kids around the age where they might start want to role playing. I mean, that's the only excuse or reason I can think about for that particular problem. Because I agree with you, the innards certainly don't match the outside.
Yeah, and I think that's probably fair. Although I think if they are aiming it that way, that's a pretty narrow margin of potential audience. You know. Those parents who also happen to have kids that are of 12 and up and otherwise, you know, don't have other ways of getting into the game.
Oh, yeah, I agree. Well, I mean, they do have. Go ahead, Tracy.
I was just going to say, I thought I also heard that they were only doing the first run with the old artwork and then the future runs would have different artwork on it. But that may have changed since I heard it.
Yeah, I haven't heard that. If that's true, then that might.
I haven't heard that either.
Yeah, if that's true, that might fix some problems.
You know, I heard that as well. I think it was one of the Gen Con panels. It was a slight sort of aside mention. Oh. I think it was the same one where they talked about who the two main customers, the two main target audience for this were, the new players and people who haven't played in a long time, that they're hitting the nostalgia button with that. And then new players, it's meant to be an easy introduction.
That must have been at the one Gen Con panel I didn't go to, and Tracy recorded for me.
Quite possibly.
Yeah. Because as I recall, you said they talked a lot about essentials in that panel.
Yeah.
If they do that, I'll say that this will improve the Redbox by no less than 500%. So, yeah. It could be perfect if that were fixed.
My only other critique of the starter set is that the I'm going to call it the blue box because, dang it, I can, was the previous starter set or basic set or whatever it was that was in the blue box. The two things are very similar. You know, I didn't feel like having read through the red box and going through the materials in here that I was getting considerably different content than I got in the blue box, you know, because – and it doesn't need to be either, but the people at Wizards talked about it like it was this huge new revolutionary thing, and then I got it. It's like, no, it's got a few new nifty things in it, but otherwise it's just that box over again.
Yeah, I didn't have that box, so I have a hatred of starter sets that they've put out for D&D for years. So that almost all of them suck. In like 90% of them are just full of suck. So I didn't bother to buy that one when it came out.
See, I bought it and used it to introduce a group of 8th graders to D&D, and it went fairly smooth. I thought it went well.
Have you had somebody brand new run it?
I have not had somebody brand new run it. Have you?
No, but I I wish. I ran into some problems trying to run it, though. I there are some things that really confuse me. Maybe it's just that I'm old. But that was one thing. And then the other thing that I didn't like about it as much were that the tokens for the monsters, instead of being bloodied on the other side, were different monsters. And so when you're trying to run through it, it's hard to keep everything separate and organized. Mm.
Yeah, and then they did the same thing in the other starter set or whatever it was called, basic set. I actually have it behind me if I shuffle through some papers. maybe I'll do that while you guys are chatting at some point. But those tokens were the exact same way. And I understand the appeal is that way we can get, you know, double the amount of tokens and monsters in there, and you don't have to have an Essentials minis, D&D minis set as well. You know, this can be the minis for a lot of different monsters over a campaign. But on the other hand, yeah, you don't have any way of indicating bloodied easily with those tokens, and it's hard to find. I spend a lot of time, you know, if I'm using them, for example, when we went to Gen Con, I put together a delve, and I didn't want to carry minis, and so I used those tokens, and I wanted a bunch of a certain kind of token, so I had to look through all the tokens once, pick out the ones I wanted, and then flip them all over and look through them a second time, trying to find just the ones
right.
I wanted. Which is a pain for organization.
Yeah, and you know, with almost 3 full years of experience in 4th edition, I'm sorry, but they should know better. It's very important to know and to indicate when a monster is bloodied. Why give a starter set where the player has to automatically to do something that's a basic tenet of 4th edition, you know, have to go and get some extra tokens or something? That just doesn't make sense to me why they would do it that way. When they made the party, they made the PC tokens have a bloodied side. Mm-hmm.
But in theory, the PC tokens are going to see a lot more use. So, I mean, I understand both sides of that issue, and I get the decision that they made.
It's more
like
variety.
I may not like it for my personal use, but that's also because I have a big box full of minis that I use in my games. So,
yeah.
But I think all in all, for introducing new people to the game, it seems like it should be relatively successful. I ran through the Create Your Character, little Choose Your Own Adventure, with my 4-year-old last weekend. And he loved it.
Mm-hmm.
He absolutely loved it. He felt like I was reading him a book. He got to make choices that were important, and then he got to kill goblins at the end and just really enjoyed it. Although, honestly, I thought he was going to lose for a little bit there. He was not playing smart, but he's 4. But other than that, I mean, I guess other than the box bringing out the sense of nostalgia, is there any reason for anybody who's been playing D&D before to buy this box?
No.
I say that sounds like a
resounding no.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, and that was sort of my sense, is that unless you're going to buy it to give someone else, you probably don't need this box set. And given that you're here listening to the Tome Show, you're probably not new to D&D. So I'm going to go ahead and say that for most of the audience listening, for almost all of the audience listening, you don't need to pick up the red box. Is that fair?
I think the only thing that was something that I'm going to use in my games is the back part of the DM's book, which includes a bunch of monsters, which has actually been kind of updated, including a fixed version of the black and white dragons, which includes some really cool new stuff that makes them much fuller as solo monsters. But just wait for the Monster Vault. It's what half a month away now or something like that. Just wait for that.
By then, that stuff will be in DDI, in the compendium on DDI as well. So.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Well, we can only hope.
Assuming there's an update in October,
right?
Someday.
Man, that's going to be a big update, though, isn't it? I was really looking forward to September to be able to start making Dark Sun characters, and never mind. And
now, I know.
Now we're going to get Dark Sun and Essentials in the same update, supposedly. Anyway, that's off topic. Let's move on.
I have a lot to say about that, and I'm keeping my mouth shut.
Move on to the next topic. I suspect this is the product that will bring forth the greatest amount of vitriol from Mr. Glenn over here.
Oh yes,
I want to talk about Heroes of the Fallen Lands. Which, first of all, let me start off by saying, what is with the titles? These are dumb. I see Heroes of the Fallen Lands, and I think I'm picking up a novel. It doesn't immediately evoke to me, this is what I need to make a character in D&D. But in any case,
you know, there's actually a typo.
What's that?
There's a typo about the name of the next one is like the Forgotten Kingdoms, Heroes of the Forgotten Kingdoms. Uh-huh. But in one spot in this book, it calls it Heroes of the Forgotten Empires. So I think they were playing around with the names and they evolved over time.
That's the impression I got, but I feel like this may have evolved in a strange direction.
Strange
or Heroes of the Forgotten Kingdoms is not different than Fallen Lands. Like, it's the same freaking name. Like,
that's fine. I don't mind that at all. It's just that the name, if I'm a new player, if I'm that 12-year-old who just played through the red box and I want more options to make characters and I want to start getting more into D&D, it doesn't automatically, when I see Heroes of the Fallen Lands, that does not automatically tell me, this is the next book in the set. This is what I should be picking up.
This is the problem. They're serving both the new players and the people who are looking for nostalgia, or they're trying to bring in older edition players. The Forgotten Kingdoms, those are the ones that aren't the core, quote unquote, aren't core races, according to the way people who don't play 4E think. Right. Like, that's where I believe the Dragonborn and the Tieflings and stuff like that are going to be, that so many people were upset were in PHB 1.
Right. All right, so
what the heck is that? Why they went? I didn't know that's why they went that direction.
That was my general assumption when I looked at it.
Yeah, that's my guess.
See, I thought that the Fallen Lands was referring to the Nintir Vale, which has been in decline. If you read the description in the compendium, and the Forgotten Kingdoms is referring to the Kingdom of Naranth, south of the Nintir Vale, and then also like the Tiefling Kingdoms and the Dragonborn Kingdoms, like Tracy said. I thought it was actually a reference to their new core world.
It's a reference to the core world stuff that none of the new players have any idea about.
Right.
Right. Well, and that's what I was going to say, is that the fact that I'm even questioning it and saying, well, I think it is, sort of is indicative of a failure of understanding there. And I've been playing for a long time, so what are the new players going to think?
Right. All right, great. So let's get into the what's actually in the book. We've been discussing the title for some time here. Jared.
Sorry.
Jared, I think this is the opportunity for me to truly ask, why does this suck?
I will tell you why this sucks. First of all, I think this is the thing that nobody is going to disagree with me on. Is anyone else's book falling apart already?
Mine is not, but I've not used it much.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, mine's not either.
Oh, okay. No? Mine is just it's awful. All the sides are bent. The pages are almost falling out. It's ridiculous. Luckily I'm not going to spend another $20 to replace it. But, you know, the thing – yeah, you can already tell where I'm going. But, you know, the thing that I kind of want to discuss is, like, can anybody, like, argue with me that the Essentials Cleric is much more powerful than the Player's Handbook Cleric? It just seems obvious to me that one is more powerful than the other. I just want to see where I stand on this.
Define exactly what you're using to measure more powerful.
Okay, I can do that. All right, so like about the okay, so basically the whole freaking class, and I have to say freaking because I don't like this class. The whole class,
and I appreciate that because I mark the show as clean. So,
the whole class is almost exactly the same as the Player's Handbook Cleric, except for two things that are not in the Essentials ones that are in the Player's Handbook one. You've got the healer's lore, which lets you add your wisdom to heals, to all powers with the healing keyword, and the rituals, which you get two known. And then you have to oppose that to a whole slew of features that the Essentials Cleric gets. He gets a utility that lets him cast light, which I understand isn't a big deal. He also gets +2 to, if you choose the Sun Cleric, he gets a +2 to every time he uses healing word. Him and all allies get a +2 to death saves. Later on, he gets Holy Cleansing, which is basically like remove curse or remove disease as a minor action for free. He gives Constitution modifier temporary hit points every time he uses healing word. He gets resurrection for free once per day. And he gets all of his encounter radiant powers. He gets combat advantage against. That is versus two rituals, which is, by the way, one feat that most people don't even think is worth a feat. And then adding your wisdom to heals. I mean, am I going crazy? Is this like not obviously more powerful? Rant over.
Sam, counterpoint.
Sorry.
I don't have a good counterpoint for that. The reason I don't have a good counterpoint is because I don't know if you know this, but Cleric is my favorite class. I love playing Clerics, even way back in the first edition days when really all Clerics could do was stand around and then heal. He makes good points. And unfortunately, I can't really speak to it because I sort of ignored the Cleric in the Heroes of the Forgotten Lands because I saw the whole resurrect thing, and I don't have resurrection in my world, so that immediately sort of took the Cleric out of the Essentials Cleric out of my mind because it's not going to be played in my game. So I don't have counterpoints to that. They're all very good points. I'm not sure that getting a +2 to a saving to a death save is extremely all that overpowered. But given the fact that it's in place of two rituals, which a lot of people don't use rituals anyway, although I do in my games.
You use them a lot.
You know, yeah. Well, I mean, in my game, I try to make it really enticing to use rituals, but I know a ton of people who don't. So if you don't use rituals, then it's like nothing to throw those two rituals away to replace that with a +2 to a couple of death saves. And, you know, I could see where he's coming from.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, because this is one of the products I've looked at, I've experienced the least of what we're looking at tonight. Mm-hmm. As I'm opening the book and looking at the Cleric, the Essentials Cleric is also giving up encounter powers. Is that not right?
No. No, he gets exactly the same. I went through. I made a list today at work of everything that both of them get. And both of them get two at-wills, one encounter, and one daily. The encounter powers come from the what domain you are. But since it has cleric, attack, and level at the top of it, these books say you can trade them out for any cleric spell, prayer.
Yeah, I see that now.
So
they're in the encounter powers are in the domains.
Which is actually really it's kind of confusing and a pain in the butt to go back and forth between them, which again puts a little nail in the this is simpler coffin. So
well, but that's not inconsistent from what I've heard. I've heard that the goal was not just to create everything simpler, but to create a wider variety of playability. So that some of the classes, you know, the rogue and the fighter were supposed to be simpler, and the cleric and the wizard were supposed to be as complex, if not more complex, than what we already had.
Okay.
Is that consistent with what you heard, Tracy? I thought I heard a sigh.
That's what I heard.
That's what you heard as well? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so there is some indicator that maybe the Essentials Cleric is overpowered.
And the wizard, but I'm not going to go into that.
So let's say it this way. There's some indication that on the complex classes, there may be some balance issues. What about the and it's worth noting for people that are interested, you know, who might be experienced players, which if you're listening to the show, you probably are. The wizard is not giving up the complexity that you have in the player's handbook wizard. If nothing else, it adds a little bit more. You start getting into some more specialization stuff that we didn't have before. Any thoughts on that kind of mechanic, the specializations that they introduce? No thoughts. are they good? Do we like them? Are they interesting? Are they choices that make the game more fun?
Anytime that you make a class godlike, it's going to be more fun. I want to play this cleric, but goal. You got to draw the line somewhere. This is that's all I'm saying. Like these would be a blast to play, but it's suddenly making your druid and your invoker look like rubbish.
Okay, but the specialization feature of the wizard, is it any good?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, I think it might help people play the characters more to have a specialization to be able to picture their character being a certain way. But yeah.
Right on. So let's talk about.
Let me actually add to that. I think the specializations sort of do what. Just to play with semantics a little bit, the specializations sort of do what builds were meant to do. I think builds in the PHB 1 were meant to give, even if you didn't do all the suggested things to choose if you did a particular build, they were meant to be a guiding post to say sort of what kind of character it is, like the rogue dagger master. You know, that build means very specific way to play that rogue. And then you could actually buy whatever feats and powers and all that you wanted. You didn't have to follow all of that. But a lot of people did, especially when they were first learning 4th edition. And that was sort of the guidepost to how what mentality your PC might have. And I think that these sort of, you know, that's what these do for the mage or for the wizard in Essentials.
Yeah. And when I created my first character, that I did follow the build because it made things easier. Because there are way too many choices otherwise.
Right on. So what about the fighter and the rogue concepts where you do get rid of a lot of the powers and complexity, and it's more of just it's not quite the same, but it's more similar to the older editions of I hit it with my sword every round. Did they find a good sort of balance in between to make those work? Tracy.
I think that's a question for Tracy. Yeah, I think it is for Tracy.
Okay, so if this wasn't for new players, I would say that I actually really like the design element of it, of taking out the dailies and making it, like you said, for some of the people who played earlier editions, make it feel more at home for them. My big problem is that they didn't build a fighter or a rogue or something like a martial class that gave what I found awesome about 4E to class types that people like me like. I like to play fighters and I like to play rogues. I don't like to play wizards. I don't like to play clerics as much. And I wish there had been a build for somebody like me a year and a half ago. If I was just coming to this now and I saw the fighter and the rogue, I don't think I would want to play. And that kind of sucks for me. But I do like the builds. I like the cleverness of the design and stuff. Sorry. Yeah.
And I'll tell you, I don't disagree. There's not much appeal to me. When I first started seeing some of the previews and things, I was really interested in... Because this is the first time they started blurring roles. They actually have a build of fighter that's a striker, and this is the first time we've seen a striker fighter in 4th edition. And it fits with the older feel of the game, but again, then you're appealing to the nostalgia of players. Maybe they're trying to bring in some of the 3rd edition holdouts, I don't know. But the idea of a striker fighter as an option appealed to me a lot, and I was interested in trying to build one and see how it worked, and then I got into this one. It's like, oh, well, I could do it, but it's so I'm so not as interested in this as I am, you know, playing a PHB fighter, just because there's so many more options and so many more powers to choose from.
It's bland.
And I like having the yeah. And I like being able to, so I know a lot of people don't like when I say this, but I visualize it as getting fatigued or potentially that the situation that in which you can use your daily only really happens once a day. Once a day, you get that insight and you're able to do this totally awesome thing. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't happen again. And I know that can be a little more mechanical than some people like, but I personally have no problem with it. And it doesn't pull me out of the game in some ways that some of the older mechanics do.
Right.
And I think I do worry that newer players who didn't grow up with D&D, who played other games instead and are coming to it, may a fair number of them may view things more like I do, and I think it kind of sucks that they're not going to have something that you know I think that they would love.
Yeah, but maybe the other book, what is it, Forgotten?
Yeah, I'm hoping Kingdoms
will fill in some options that, you know, oh well, for those people they can play a paladin or druid or whatever.
Right.
We'll have to wait and see what happens. What else is in this book?
They have the races.
They do have the races. which I mean, I guess if nothing else, it means that we're going to get updated versions of the core races that start getting the new racial mechanic where they have choices for one of the stats.
Which is great.
Yeah.
Which is cool.
In my mind.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's cool, and that's something I was sort of expecting to see at some point, and I'm glad to see it here. We got the new rarity mechanic kind of in here for magic items, or it's at least mentioned, but not really. We don't get a lot of explanation, I guess, if that makes sense.
Right.
Yeah, it's more left to the domain of the DM.
Yeah, I expect we'll see more about it when the DM kit comes out.
You skipped the thing I really like, though.
Give it to me.
You skipped... They have a section in here under the skills section, and in the skills section for the players, yes, when it talks about each skill, it has a little improvising with this skill. So improvising with acrobatics, improvising with arcana, et cetera, et cetera. And it gives, you know, two or three little bullet points about what can you do with this skill. And I think it's a really awesome way to present the skills to people rather than just saying acrobatics, this is the skill you use when you want to do this one thing, for example, and then don't give any other examples ever, you know, or, you know, like the improvising with acrobatics section, it's on page 287. If you have your book, it's like, you know, what if you want to slide down a staircase on a shield while you're standing? Or what if you want to somersault over a creature that's the same size as you? Or what if you want to swing from a chandelier? You know, just examples. And you know, depending on your level of experience or your level of comfort with doing different things, or maybe with DMs you've been exposed to in the past if you've played before, those things may not occur to you necessarily. You know, if you only think of, you know, acrobatics as, you know, you typically use it to maintain your balance. Okay, so I'm walking on a narrow ledge and I can use acrobatics. What else could I possibly do with it? And these sections are really great, I think.
Okay, that's cool.
I like that too. I think, though, it needs to stay – it should have stayed in the rules compendium, though, because that's for all players and it's just double printing the same thing. So, but that was a good section. It deserved to be printed.
Mm-hmm. Tracy?
Yeah.
I was going to say, I also like that it's improvising with, and so that way it opens up a discussion with your DM if you want to try to do something that, quote unquote, isn't in the rules. Because my players do this to me sometimes. They're like, well, it's not in the rules that I can do this. And I was like, just ask me and we'll do it. You know, we'll just have a conversation. We'll negotiate it out and we'll have fun.
Yeah. And I think that's good to have something in a introductory book that sort of encourages creativity with the rules is a definite positive move that if it had been there, you know, in Player's Handbook 1 would have been a good thing for the game as well. I don't think it was necessarily needed, but I think it's a move in the positive direction. All right. So I think we've discussed Heroes of the Fallen Lands adequately here. Let's go through real quick. Is it a good book for new players? It sounds like Tracy is saying depends on what kind of player you are.
I think it depends on what kind of player you are. I think overall, though, a new player should pick it up because it does go through and teach you how to build a character and tells you a little bit about why you're making various choices.
Okay. And what about for experienced players? Is this a book that an experienced player should pick up?
Jared says no.
I think it's
so. Right, we're not surprised at that.
I think it depends.
Sam, you think it depends?
I think it depends. I think it has issues, and I think Jared did a good job of just pointing out, you know, look, the cleric and the wizard seem really overpowered. So if you're going to play in a game where people are using PHB1 clerics and wizards, you know, you're going to be able to compete with them even if you're a new player because you've got a really powerful build. On the other hand, if you're the type of player that likes a melee character and you play a fighter, when you go sit at that table, you might be a little disappointed at the lack of seeming lack of options. And, you know, they can tell me all they want about the math and how they figured it out and how even without dailies, you can do the same amount of damage and have the same attack bonuses. But across levels, the average is the same. But I don't care about that. What I care about is what's my experience at the table. And if the guy next to me is doing really awesome fighter dailies that just took out the big baddie in this battle and I didn't have that option, I might feel a little jilted.
Yeah. Here's what I'm going to say is that I think this is a book that, well, first of all, the cleric is pigeonholed enough that I don't have a lot of interest in it, even if it is really powerful. In terms of story, it just doesn't appeal to me. The wizard intrigues me. I might play with that a little bit. The fighter and the rogue feel like this might be good to have on hand for a third edition or Pathfinder player, and their party all want, or, you know, their group wants to all play fourth edition for a campaign, and they really don't want to. Play a fighter or a rogue from Essentials, and you're going to have a pretty hybrid experience, you know? It feels very much of 3rd edition in the 4th edition game.
Yeah, but the things that it lacks in 4th edition that make it closer to 3rd edition are also not made up for. for example, you know, people that play third edition, at least people that I know, you know, one of the things they love are all the skills and skill ranks and crafting and doing all these really awesome things with skills. And so they'll lose that, and then they don't gain anything playing a fighter. So some of the stuff that they maybe thought was cool and one of the reasons they played a fighter, regardless of the I hit it with my axe thing, they're not going to regain that when they play fourth edition. So I'm not sure that that's actually the way to go, to be honest. Maybe. I think could maybe make up for some of that, you know, apparent lack of skill choices, which I don't agree with that, by the way. I think there's plenty of skills in fourth edition, but I know that that's a complaint. So if that's something that needs to be addressed, it's not going to be addressed by giving them a simple fighter with no daily.
Yeah, I mean, I guess there's still more. I guess you don't have the as many options with the essentials fighter in terms of out of combat, like skills, but in combat you are getting more options than a third edition fighter had, because it's not just I go up and I hit it with my axe. You've got all these, you do have the stances and the dailies and the other choices. So I think,
yeah, good point.
I think there's some mix in there, and it depends on the kind of game you're going to play. Anyway, unless there's something really burning that we haven't mentioned, let's move on. Now we're going to move into we've gone from the books that I'm pretty indifferent about, that I don't think most listeners of this show need to probably pick up, and we're moving into the books that I think have a lot more appeal to existing players. So let's start with the Rules Compendium.
Here.
The Rules Compendium is It's an updated set of rules that is supposed to be a handy sort of tabletop reference. If you need to look something up, you don't have to figure out which book it's in. You just grab the Rules Compendium, you flip through, and there's the information. Does it do that? Is it good at that?
Used it, yeah. It does exactly what its job is. So I usually don't have books at the table. Usually I run bookless, so to speak. And if there's a question about a rule, I wing it on, you know, I rule it on the fly. And then if someone's really concerned about my decision, they can send me an email later. And everybody at my table knows that. So I usually don't have the books at the table. But I brought the compendium to the table for the past couple of games. And it's very easy to look things up because of the way it's organized. And it's laid out well. It's, you know, the typesetting is really, you know, things don't get lost in these large paragraphs. It's still pretty easy to find things, and it's of course all updated with all the errata, so it's makes everybody happy. Mm-hmm. And it's compact at the same time, so you can put it in your bag and not feel like you're lugging around 10 hardbound books. It's good. I like it.
And it does a nice job of updating the current climate towards skill challenges. I really like that section.
Mm-mm. Yeah.
And it introduces some concepts into skill challenges that didn't exist before that I think make skill challenges more useful to new players and players who just didn't like skill challenges.
Mm-hmm. I agree with that.
Tracy, what do you think?
I think the only... I really like the Rules Compendium. I just wish it wasn't called the Rules Compendium. But because some things in here vary widely as to whether or not people are going to use them at their table, and putting it as saying that it's a rule now, just I know I'm going to have fights.
Yeah. Are you talking about the first, yeah, the first what, 50-some pages?
That's part of it too. There's a lot of stuff in there that has absolutely nothing to do with rules.
Yeah,
people have already upset. Right, and people have also been saying that the appendix are now rules as written, the how to do rewards and stuff like that, which also I know I'm gonna fight.
Sure.
And how to build encounters and everything like that. That stuff, I'm not even sure, to be honest, why it's in the Rules Compendium rather than the new Dungeon Master stuff. But, yeah. So if they had called it something else, like everything you need to know about D&D, I would be like, yes!
Yeah, but on the other hand, I sort of feel like I don't want the everything you need to know about D&D book. I want a rules compendium. I would have preferred they not have those things in there at all. You know, it seems to me that the appendix on treasure and that kind of stuff, and encounter design and all that is fine. And it seems like it almost should have gone into the Dungeon Master's Guide 3 that never came out. You know?
Right.
Yeah.
And the introduction section drove me up the wall because it's like, this is so not what I bought this book for. And if I knew this is what this book was, I wouldn't have bought it. But the rest of the Rules Compendium I've found to be very good. I normally...
See, I disagree with you because I think if Essentials is really focused on new players, let's go back to what Tracy said about the Red Box. The DM's guide in the Red Box sucks. And if that's the case and you're a new DM and you pick up this rules compendium, you need that first 50 pages.
Right. But you're sort of making my point. That's not what the rules compendium is for. That's what the DM's kit is for. That's stuff that should be in the DM's kit. And who knows, it might be. We don't have that yet. But I want the rules compendium to just be a quick reference guide for rules. And I think they could have included some other things in here that aren't here. And maybe they are, and I just haven't found them yet. Or whatever. But I don't know. That opening section sort of, that's not what I wanted.
Well, and yeah. I'm also a little concerned that there's no... there's no discussion of the other books at all, from what I can tell, that are outside the Essentials line. But that's just me.
Jared, you were going to say?
Yeah, there's zero mention of the Player's Handbook. I was going to say that the Dungeons & Dragons Worlds section, it kind of felt like a prolonged commercial. And honestly, a lot of Essentials feels kind of like a prolonged commercial for the Essentials products. Uh-huh. And it gets a little grating. I mean, I can't. I live in a glass house, so I can't throw stones. I do plenty of commercials on my show, but I. You know what? That's for free. I paid $20 for this book. You know, and I don't know. It just seems sometimes They're selling me everything else in Essentials, and then for some reason they throw in one of the core books, which is, you know, a couple of the core books, which are all the campaign setting stuff. It's a little grating when you just think that you're reading a rules compendium. Like you said, Jeff, I felt like a lot of this was superfluous.
Mm-hmm.
No, well, but- I agree with the stuff about the planes and the different worlds. I wasn't necessarily – that's not necessary. But I do think that the stuff, you know, in the beginning about, you know, what is in this game and what's the history of the game and what are the basics of play, just as a tiny overview, you know, is really good for a new DM. And think about – you know, and this is where I'm going to probably get scorn, but this is marketing, right? So they released this at the same time as Heroes of the Fallen Lands and shortly after the Red Box. So they had to include that information that would support a new DM because this is a line of products for new players. And if they didn't support the new DM, because the DM kit's not coming out until October 19th or November 19th or whenever it's coming out, they couldn't wait that long. You know, their marketing system doesn't work like that. Their marketing system works like this. We're teasing you a little bit and we're giving you this product that's almost everything that it says it is and that you want, and then you're going to have to buy another product to supplement it to sort of round out your collection. And that's fine. I don't have a problem with a corporation trying to make money. They make products I like, so it's not a problem.
Right.
But I do see where you're coming from with the marketing, but I also disagree a little bit in that I think that this information is useful for new DMs.
Right. And I'm a little torn because you're right, and that's the truth of the matter now. But these are books that are supposed to be eternally on the shelves with the others in a few months. They should all just be there forever. So there's for the rest of time, that's not going to be an issue. And so for the short term, you're right. In the long term, it's grading.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, the other thing is, I guess the Rules Compendium is also supposed to be one of the few ones that every player should pick up, according to their thing. So having the planes and everything in there makes some sense, because you can't necessarily guarantee that people are going to have both players' books. So then where do you put it? You'd have to put it in the rules compendium.
Yeah, and I don't want to be overly negative, because honestly, I looked at the rules compendium. I wasn't sure that it would appeal to me at all, because I don't do a lot of book lookups at my table. I have a rules lawyer that answers all those questions for me. and he plays, you know, he's at the game store playing LFR and encounters and all that kind of stuff, you know, multiple times a week. So if anybody knows the rules really well, it's him.
Right.
Which is ironic, because when 4th edition started, he had never played the game before. but now he knows it better than all of us. But it,
rules lawyers aren't made; they're born. Jeff, sorry right. to tell you.
Yes, well, and he was a Magic player before, so I know where it came from.
So he didn't play anything before 4th edition.
We introduced him to Dungeons and Dragons,
right.
And now he knows the rules better than all of us.
That's what happened to me, because yeah. when I started playing, I learned all the rules and I knew them better than the rest of the guys at the table, and then I became the DM.
Well, in fairness, I started in 2nd edition, where if you did know all the rules, you were on a crack.
So, that's impossible.
Right. So, I mean, I guess either him or I had my laptop and I could look something up in the compendium real quick if we need to look something up. That's how we looked stuff up. At my last session, I didn't pull out my laptop at all, except to look up, I think, a magic item once. Beyond that, I used the rules compendium for everything, and I was successful. Anytime I needed to look something up, I found it in there, and I found it pretty quickly. I also at one point didn't think I would like the form, you know, the smaller mm-hmm. book and the soft cover and all that just didn't seem like it would appeal to me. But I'll tell you, I can flip through the pages of a small soft cover book a lot faster than I can flip through the cover of a large hardcover book.
I'll agree with that for this book. I think it works for this book for some reason, and maybe my rules compendium is built more like your Heroes of the Fallen Lands, because this one isn't falling apart. My Heroes of the Fallen Lands is falling apart, but rules compendium is doing just fine. Yeah. So
you must have gotten a bad bind there.
Must be what it is, because total waste. But
I also really good. Sorry.
And that kind of thing happens in production and stuff sometimes. It doesn't have anything to do with Wizards. You know, I noticed also...
I'm still going to blame them.
Well, sure. I noticed in my Heroes of the Fallen Lands, inside the back cover, there is a small splinter of wood. Inside the two pieces of paper that make up the cover, a splinter of wood got stuck inside, and I don't know, you know. So these kinds of things just sometimes happen, and it's not a big deal.
So, Tracy, what were you going to say?
The one thing I want to say is I do like that they included an example of play in here. Mm-hmm. I think for new players, that'll be really useful. It's not that long, but maybe they should have pointed to people to podcasts after that.
Yeah, I was going to say, if anybody wants to know how a session of play sounds like, I know of a couple of really good actual play podcasts on the Vorpal Network that have some great examples.
No freaking kidding.
But sometimes it's good to be able to read it and at your own pace instead of trying to make out people's voices and everything. Yeah.
Sure, whatever.
I will say, before podcasts came along, reading, because I started in 3rd edition, reading in the Dungeon Master's Guide, that example of play sold me on the system. So I'll agree with that. Those are really important. And they actually included that for skill challenges too, which is something that was missing a little bit, I felt. I don't know. Their examples didn't really work that great for me up until now, and this one's pretty good.
Yeah.
That was one of my complaints. I thought their skill challenge examples sucked.
Okay.
In this book or in the DM?
No. All prior to this. In this book, they're good. Yeah.
Okay, so it sounds like we have a few quibbles and issues with the rules compendium, but by and large, we really like it. Is that fair?
Yes.
Yeah, have one of these at your table.
Okay. So the last product for us to talk about, I think only two of us have, but correct me if I'm wrong, we're going to talk about the Dungeon Tiles Dungeon Set, a name that makes sense but is a little bit awkward to talk about. Dungeon Tiles Dungeons seems like a silly name until you realize that there's also going to be Dungeon Tiles Wilderness and Dungeon Tiles City. And then it kind of makes some sense.
Well, I think the official name is Dungeon Tiles Master Set, right? It's supposed to be like I don't know what the actual thing says in the front of it, but
you're right, but
yeah, but I get what you're saying. It's kind of weird.
You still have dungeon in the name twice, but that's fine. That said, Sam, you're the other one that actually has this, right?
Actually, I did not purchase it.
Tracy, do you have it?
No.
And Jared.
Nope, I don't use these things anymore.
Well, let me tell you why. Let me tell you why I didn't buy it. I walked around the store with it for about 20 minutes, and I kept looking at it and looking at it, and I thought, this box is really cool, and it's great for the 3D elements. And I had already heard that, but I hadn't really seen it, right? So I just thought, oh, should I buy this? Should I buy this? But I'll be honest and say I've got at least two sets of every other set they've ever released, and I just don't need it.
Yeah. See, here is my thing. I started off with 4th edition when they – or not even with 4th edition. When they first started putting out dungeon tiles, I started buying a few of them here and there. And I tried them a few times, and I didn't like them. There were problems with them that, you know, pieces sliding around. They wouldn't stay together, whatever. It just wasn't working for me.
Felt is your friend.
Right. Then I've talked to some people in the last year or so, and we just put an episode out just before Gen Con about mapping and that kind of stuff and discussed some strategies to use. And now I realize ways that I can use Dungeon Tiles successfully, and I really like building my maps ahead of time. I'm doing it all on giant sheets of grid paper that I buy at the office supply store, so I'm doing all this anyway. It's not that much more difficult to do with Dungeon Tiles. But I don't want to have to go back and try to find all these now out-of-print dungeon tiles, and you know, I'm never going to get them all. So I picked this up, and I picked this up mostly for the review, thinking, well, I'll look at it, and I'll add it to my collection, and I might use it someday or whatever. But suddenly, I'm really reinvigorated to start using dungeon tiles again. This gives me a lot of pieces, because one of the problems you have is that you have to buy a couple of sets whenever a new one comes out to really make it work. But you don't with this. And it's not that much more expensive than a normal set of dungeon tiles. But you get a lot of different pieces. I mean, the box is almost full of the tiles, and you get a wide variety. They're older sets, but you get a variety of them, and you get you can do a lot of stuff with it. And then the extra cool on top is that the box is a tile. Both the upper part of the box and the bottom part of the box are covered with the print of a dungeon tile.
And the sides, right? The sides are like walls.
And the sides are like walls. Yeah, it's absolutely brilliant. And there's no print on it. There's no title on it. There's no nothing on it. There's a slip case that goes on top. And I'll tell you what, I threw my slip case away because I don't care. Okay? I have a box that looks like a giant dungeon tile. Guess what? I'm going to have my dungeon pieces in there. I don't need to know what the title of it is, you know?
Right.
So now I have these two 3D elements I can fit into my game that are really cool. And now I'm all excited about getting out my old dungeon tiles that I haven't used for ages and trying to buy up new sets. And like I mentioned in the sponsor spot, going off to Noble Knight and finding old sets that aren't too expensive. I'm really excited to start using dungeon tiles again. I really wish they had put these out at the beginning.
Yes.
And I would have bought so many more dungeon tiles. Maybe it's good. My wife won't divorce me now because I haven't spent all this time on dungeon tiles. But if this had come out at the beginning, I would have spent so much more money on dungeon tiles because this is a really good starter set. Or the comparison I keep using is like Magic. This is the starter pack, and then all the other dungeon tiles that have come out in the smaller packages are the boosters. You know, those are the extra little things to get a few extra pieces of this or a few extra whatever or a different feel over there or whatever. But this is my starter pack, and it works really well.
Yeah, I really want to get a copy. I held off because I'm going to be running games for New York Comic Con, and I just needed something that they could give me for free.
Nice.
Yeah, no, I hear you. I almost went out and bought another set just because, you know, I was looking at getting some other dungeon tiles, and I'm like, well, I could buy Deserts of Athis for $10, or for $3 more, I can get another huge box of dungeon tiles, you know, of the essential set. So I really like this. This is of all of the essentials products so far, I think this is the one I'm most excited about, which is a huge surprise to me because I came into it so not caring anything about dungeon tiles. But this set works really well. So anyway, I got to go out and get some foam board and sticky tack, and I think I'm going to be good to go.
Awesome.
Sweet.
Yeah, I mean, I might pick it up just because I'm a completist, and that's horrible, but it's the case. But I mean, seriously, it's a good value and everything. I just couldn't, you know. So honestly, here's what I thought, and this is their marketing working against them. I thought, well, this is an evergreen product. It'll be here in a couple months when I come in to get the DM's kit and that, you know. So I actually didn't buy it because of that. So I don't know what that says, but.
If, I mean, ultimately, if you give them your money, I think they'll be happy with it, whether you give it to them now or in a few months.
Yeah, you're probably right.
Personally, I'm going to stick with my Wet Erase map because it's just fun to draw. So that's just me.
No, and I still have that too. I still have my the basic bottom of my table is my Chessex Wet Erase battle map.
Good man.
Yeah. Right. And
I mean, I use a variety as well. I have one of those, and then I have a bunch of Paizo flip mats, and then I bought a couple of the new Gale Force 9 D&D maps, the rollout maps that they put out. So I use a variety, but dungeon tiles are still my favorite. I'm a total dungeon tile geek.
Yeah, my thing is that in the last year or so, I've tried a lot of different methods for mapping, and I've come to the very clear decision that I want to be able to set it up ahead of time.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to have to get up and draw my map in the beginning of an encounter, because then I'm killing time drawing maps that we could be using killing monsters.
Oh, that's a good point.
And so, you know, the Wet Erase works well for one encounter a night, but for all the other encounters, I need to have it on something else.
Yeah, and plus I'm a horrible artist, so I can't draw a tree even. I can draw a rock on a map, and that's pretty much it.
Yeah.
You know what I usually do is I tell the players what is going on in the scene, and then I hand them the pen and say draw it. Is usually what I'll do. That way I'm not drawing something that they weren't expecting, and if we need to collaborate, then we can do it. But it allows them to draw their own difficult terrain and the way that they imagined it, and usually I don't have any problem with it.
That's cool.
So that's usually what I do. But
so in any case, that's the Dungeon Tiles Master Set Dungeon from the Essentials line, and I think it's made of awesome, but that's me. Okay, should we summarize what we talked about tonight? We talked about the Red Box, and we said if you're listening to this show, the only reason you should be buying it is to give it to somebody else. Does that sound fair?
Fair enough.
Yep.
All right, and we said Heroes of the Forgotten Lands, some of the classes might be overpowered, and the other classes might be a little bit boring.
Yep.
Yeah.
Bingo.
Okay. We said Rules Compendium, everybody should have at their table.
Yes.
Absolutely.
And I said that the Dungeon Tiles Master Set Dungeon is built from pure awesome.
That's what you said.
Okay.
I believe you, Jeff.
I think that covers our episode then. I think we've given these first four products from the Essentials line a pretty fair shake, and my goal then is to lump the other, six products together into another review later on down the road. Probably, the last one hasn't come out till November or December?
I think November 19th is okay. The final release date for all
of
those.
So we'll have to put together a Christmas episode on the second part. Will the three of you, I guess, be joining me for the second part so we can be consistent?
Sure. Absolutely. I am
always glad to do that.
Awesome.
Yeah, the thing I'm looking forward to is the Monster Vault, to be honest.
All right, well.
Oh, me too, yeah.
We will try to get the four of us together again. I'm sure that some of my regular contributors will be disappointed because an email didn't go out like usual to my contributors this month saying, hey, who wants to be on the show? This is what we're going to talk about. Because two of you contacted me and said, I got to talk about this. And then Tracy was required to come on because she's the least experienced.
I'm differently experienced.
This is the most differently experienced. Yes.
But I think I'm glad I wasn't the only one who was begging to be on this show.
You know what? It's like, okay, be proactive then. If you want to be on the Tome Show, now there's competition.
Apparently, that's right. Yeah. Since Gen Con, I've had emails from multiple contributors saying, hey, I never got an email this month and I wanted to be on the show. It's like, oh, well, other people called me and I just said, okay, let's do it, you know?
Yes, I'm just looking.
The advice episode that I just recorded the other day that's going to be coming out Thursday, although that tells people when this is being recorded because it won't come out for a week or two. That the person who I've got on there is somebody that I've never really even talked to before other than some interactions on Twitter. But at my advice guest host had fallen through for the month, and I needed one, and I needed to record it soon so I could get it out this month. And he happened to have just tweeted me and said, "Hey, if you ever want a guest on the Tome Show, let me know." And I'm like, "Okay, let's do it. Are you?" So he came on, and we did it, and it worked out. It was good.
Awesome.
So, all right. I'm going to call that episode 152. I want to thank our sponsor, Noble Knight Games, as well as our guests. Let's give them all a chance to pimp their stuff. Jared Glynn.
Oh, I'm a master at pimping, but just go to www.powersourcepodcast.com. You can listen to the Power Source there. It's just a D&D show, and it's part of the Vorpal Network, so support our wonderful network. So right. Go and do that.
Are you still doing 2 hours weekly?
This last episode, it was my birthday last week, so we did what amounts to about a half hour episode. So we just did Primal Worlds. We discussed villains in Western themed campaigns. So that's what we did. That should be coming out pretty soon here. Very cool. Actually, yeah, by the time this episode is out, it will have been out for a little while.
I really enjoy the Power Source, but it is a sheer volume of podcast listening that I struggle to keep up with.
Yeah, we hope that people listen to one every month. Yeah. It's kind of our goal. So.
But at the same time, you're trying to appeal to geeks, and geeks are completists. So.
Oh, yeah. What am I thinking?
I've recently discovered the feature on my iPod that lets me listen to everything in double time, and that has been a huge lifesaver.
Really? That exists?
Oh, yeah. I can listen to everything at double speed, and it shifts the pitch so it doesn't sound all funny. I listen to all of 4Geeks 4E. In that.
Oh, Jesus.
Oh my gosh, dude, my life.
You're gonna have to tell me how to do that.
Yeah, me too.
I don't know if it's on other touches, but it's on, or if it's on other iPods, but it's on the touch.
Wow.
There's just looking at my iTunes right now. So
there's just a little icon on the iPod touch when you're playing something that there's a little icon in the corner that says 2x, and you push it and suddenly everything is double speed. It's brilliant,
dude.
Speaking of brilliant, Tracy Hurley.
Yes.
I decided you're the brilliant one. Where can we find you?
You can always find me at SarahDarkMagic.com. That's my blog. Or on Twitter as SarahDarkMagic. And I also had a post last week on Robert Schwab's blog.
Yes, you did. And you write regularly for me.
Yes, the temporary hit points.
And you write regularly over at Loremaster.
Yes, and I just started a new one at Troll in the Corner. I'm going to be doing like twice a month for them. And then I do 4Geeks 4E, great podcast, and the DM Roundtable.
So you're busy.
Maybe, just a little bit.
Yeah. You ever think that eventually you need to develop the ability to say no? That you might overcommit yourself?
No. See, I just said it.
Oh, I see. Because I tell you, that's my struggle, is that there's so many projects I want to do, and I just don't have the time.
Yeah, no, I think I'm going to cut myself off for a little while now so that I can do special projects that I want to. I need some time for them, too. Yeah,
that's probably good. Plus, and you can cut yourself off from everybody except for my stuff.
Okay.
Okay. Good. And Sam, or Samuel Dillon.
You can call me Sam. It's fine.
All right. Sam Diggity, where can we find you?
Well, you can always find me on Twitter at DM Samuel, and you can always, almost always, find me on RPG Musings, although not as much lately because I got really busy, and then I've been doing guest posts for all these other people. Gee, who did I do a guest post for? Oh, yeah, for Temporary Hit Points, some website by some guy named Jeff.
Funny about that. Yeah. It's funny how the contributors on this podcast also tend to be the guests on that side. In fact, I think all three of you have written for me this month.
Oh, yeah, man. Yeah. That's a great site. Everyone needs to go and look at it.
That's right.
It's hit There's my even, rotation, so.
I even have an article in the can for Jeff, actually.
You do, in fact. So, you've sent it to me already, and I need to give it a good look over.
Yeah, crack the whip. Anyway, and you can find me on 4Geeks4E, that illustrious podcast that also has Tracy Hurley, and the DM Roundtable. I'm often on there as well. So that's it. Oh, and it, let me give a shout out actually to RPGGeek.com, which I am Lord Dylan on there, but you can probably find me at DM Samuel on there too. It's a pretty good RPG database and forums, and there's good conversation. The people are really nice, and you can get lots of different session reports and reviews and whatnot from various different points of view. So,
very cool.
Yeah.
And let me say about since we have half of the hosts, you know, the good ones from 4Geeks 4E.
Boy.
Which apparently I'm going to feel justified in saying after I listen to the latest episode. I've really enjoyed 4Geeks 4E as I've gotten caught up with it. In some ways, 4Geeks 4E is doing what my early attempt at the Tome Show was trying to do, is I wanted to do something concise, which I'm totally failing at in the last few years. And I wanted to do something that got guests on, which I've gotten better at, obviously, in the last few years. That first year or so, getting guests on was a struggle, but you guys pulled it off from the beginning, and I've really enjoyed listening to it. So keep it up and keep working at it. But don't fall into that podcaster hole. Podcasters eventually fall in love with their voices, and the shows get longer and longer and longer.
Ow, Jeff, you cut me deep. You cut me deep.
you started long, didn't you?
Yeah, we did. I'm not taking offense because I think our first episode was already creeping up on 2 hours. So, yep.
All right. So, and if people want to get a hold of me, you can email me at thetomeshow@gmail.com. Visit the forums, which are now hosted over at the Gamers Haven podcast and are linked on the site. And you can call the Tome's Biz line at 919-BIZ-TOME. That's 919-BIZ-TOME. Call in with your thoughts, questions, or comments for upcoming episodes. Maybe you want to talk about the second set of essentials or whatever else we end up chatting about this coming couple of months. It's all kind of a blur right now. I've got way too much stuff backed up. Some exciting things, though. Anyway, you can also review the show on iTunes, tell people about it, help spread the word, and don't forget to consider checking out the Tome's Amazon store for products discussed on the show and more. It helps pay for our bills. Links for things mentioned in the show can be found in the show notes on the website at thetomeshow.com. This has been episode 152, where Tracy has become a halfling thief. Sam is an elf war priest, and Jared decided to stick with his shard mind monk because essential sucks.
Yes.
This has been part one of our review of D&D Essentials of
The Tome.
I'm on the wall.